Weirdly Beloveds, we are gathered here today for some juicy conversations about all things spiritually queer and queerly spiritual. I'm Sylvia Will Gather Rainbow, a spiritual life coach, retreat host with the most, and a drag queen, and I'll be chatting with the most amazing folks or simply sharing some wisdom on my own. If you like what I'm serving, please remember to subscribe so we can keep hanging out. All right, let's get super woo together in this spiritual AF, queer AF, cosmic container. And blast off! Hello, beloveds, and welcome back to another episode of Queerly Beloved. In this one, I chat with my friend whom I've known for over 20 years, Cater Sparks, who is a life coach for men with a focus on queer men. He's certified through CTI and the International Coaches Federation, ICF. He works for every man, leading retreats and facilitating their weekly GBTQ men's group. Before stepping into the coaching world, Cater spent 20 years in NYC, where he was a writer and editor at various publications, and where we knew each other. So we start this interview taking a trip down memory lane, recalling our days connecting in NYC, where we were both part of the fashion world and the nightlife glitterati. And we both share our stories of how we transitioned from that kind of work and lifestyle into the work and lifestyle we're each experiencing now in our coaching work. We thank our guardian angels at this point for keeping us safe during some very debaucherous days that we both experienced in NYC. And we talk about the ways that working with coaches has helped and influenced us on our individual paths to becoming who we are today. We then talk about the power of psychedelics and the importance of psychedelics integration. We talk about seeing the world through a spiritual lens. We chat about men's work and the value of straight men working with gay men coaches. We talk about gay men being a stand for heart-centered vulnerability and being in touch with emotions. And we talk about the value of retreats for GBTQ men. All these topics and many more in this fun interview with Cater Sparks. Enjoy. Well, hello, Cater Sparks, and welcome to Queerly Beloved.
Thanks, Will. It's so great to see you.
Yeah. I'm excited to do this. It's so fun to have our paths cross in this way and see how they are weaving together. And yeah, it's just a total joy.
I totally agree. It's been what, like 20 years of knowing each other?
Yeah, I would guess so. 20 years, which would be, when I was in my mid-20s. Yeah, in New York City. Yeah, and we'll get into some of that for sure. And I feel like there's some connections and commonalities in our path from where we were living it up in New York City to where we are today, living it up totally. In other ways. But before we get into all that and many other exciting topics, I'd like to ask you the first question I always ask my guests, and there's always an option to have me go first if you want some more time to sit with it. But the question is to kind of take a breath and get centered in the present moment and to tell me who you are in this moment, at this time in your life and at this time in the day that you're having, but to describe who you are by describing the perfect drag avatar that embodies that. And it doesn't have to be like a RuPaul's Drag Race avatar. It can just be any kind of avatar, any kind of drag avatar that really encapsulates who you are in this moment.
Oh my goodness. Well, I've been doing drag since I was 18. So my first son's name is Spectrogram. I was named by my drag mom, Holly Graham. And so I think Spectra still really captures who I am as a person, just this like queen of the universe of all different realms of openness, excitement, adventure, curiosity, and a hell of a good dancer. Mm. So that is who I am. That's the Spectra has always been a part. And when I became a coach, in my coach training, someone brought her up as an inner ally saying like, as a man who can walk out in public as a woman, that takes a lot of courage and a lot of power. Mm-hmm. She is definitely a source of power for you.
I love that. And I love that name, Spectrogram. It's like a name I've never heard before, never really conceived of. That's beautiful. And so just to help bring it into this moment, to anchor it into this moment, what do you think Spectra would be wearing that would help express how you're feeling in this moment in your life and on this day?
Well, I mean, today it's a cozy, rainy day at home, but Spectra would always be in a hologram caftan.
A hologram caftan work.
100%.
Amazing. Amazing.
Maybe with some biodegradable glitter tea that she'd be sipping. But
it's like tea that is like glitter. It's like a cup of glitter. Amazing. And what is the allure or perhaps like meaning or significance for you of the glitter and the hologram? Like, does that hold any, aside from it being visually exciting and interesting, does it hold any more significance, meaning?
I mean, to me, there's a psychedelic element. I was a raver, you know, back in the 90s, and I will still be stopped in my tracks when I see a star hologram sticker, because I will look at that thing for way too long and get back to a moment with like D-Light 1995 in a warehouse, you know?
Yeah.
Holograms have been something that always just bring me joy. My name is Spectrogram. Hologram is my... Literally, uh-huh. My name is Hologram. So it's something that really I've always connected with. Like, I love hologram. Mm-hmm. I love just that. I love, you know, what's the bird? Is it a raven that just like shiny things?
That's, you know, right.
I'm so attracted to sparkly, shiny. And also, you know, it does send me into a realm of another dimension, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like the interesting thing about holograms is that it's almost like a 3D experience, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just seeing the flat plane 2D, but it brings us into a 3D experience. And then that's also combined with the spectrum, right, of the rainbow. And so it's, in some ways, it's like the embodiment of this spiritual experience, right? It's almost like we get to peek at what spirit might look like in a hologram. Mm-hmm. And it is, there's something really appealing and exciting about that. And I love that you in your drag avatar are able to stand for that and help provide that for folks. Do you actually have a hologram caftan?
Well, I have a pink sequined ombre caftan that my friend Rainy made me for a couple of Halloweens ago that my mother has worn for her birthday party, that my friend Sunny has worn for New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. He's gotten a lot of wears. So next step is a hologram caftan.
Yeah, that needs to manifest. That sounds amazing. So yeah, I'll check in and share where I'm at today. So I'm on the first day of a 3-day water fast. And so I'm in this kind of like, oh, maybe I'm hungry and maybe, and I'm not eating for a while. I'm like kind of like playing with that knowing. It also has me feeling lighter because it already has been quite a few hours since I've eaten. And so I think the drag avatar that describes this place that I'm in on day one of a 3-day water fast is she's kind of floaty and she's kind of like just floating above. So she's wearing heels, but she doesn't actually have contact with the ground. She just kind of floats above. And she's coming in as gray for me right now. She's not in the vibrancy of I've done it and now I'm like receiving the benefits of it. She's kind of in this moment of, oh gosh, how's this going to be? And so that I'm seeing right now as like this kind of gray avatar, but it's still chic. It's kind of this, I don't know. I'm seeing like post-apocalyptic, like, you know, some kind of Star Wars modern fashion, you know, where it's kind of drab but fabulous, you know?
Dune.
Yeah. 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 Like Dune. Yeah. I haven't seen the new Dune, but definitely those vibes, like neutral, but really fabulous in its textures. And it's, yeah, that's how I'm feeling right now.
Love it. There's no spilling the tea because that's all she has to drink, girl.
That's all she has to drink. You're right, girl. Don't spill that tea.
Don't spill that tea, girl.
Oh my God. So yeah, it's perfect that we are talking about caftans and Dune inspired fashion, because I feel like some of our roots, some of our first intertwining of our paths came during the days of NYC and gallivanting around the fashion world. So let's reflect a little bit on that before we dive into some of the more personal growth and spiritual topics that are more involved in the work that we're both currently doing. So yeah, will you share with me what you remember in terms of how we connected or what you were up to back 20 years ago?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I moved to New York in 1999 to open the store Jeffrey, RIP, in the meatpacking district. We started the meatpacking district. And and then I quickly jumped into public relations, which then led to journalism, writing. I was an editor. And so I was out a lot covering nightlife, covering design, travel, men's fashion. And I remember specifically when, I don't know where we were. We were on a rooftop with Meg McGinnis, I think. And maybe it's not a Hotel Americano, somewhere like that. And it was just so fun. The sun was setting. We were having such a great time. And that was a time I really enjoyed connecting with you.
I love that. Yeah. I do feel like when I think about you, I think about my days with Issa Miyake. So I was working with Issa Miyake for a while. And I feel like you probably came to some of those events that we were doing. My good friend Jason, whose last name I'm blanking on, but I feel like you connected with him. But I've always loved your name, like Cater Sparks, like similar to RuPaul, you know, like her mom named her RuPaul and she knew that she was going to be this superstar. Is Cater Sparks your actual birth given name or is it a name that came to you?
It is my actual real name. My great-grandfather was named Cater Wolford, and I'm named after him. Mm. And Sparks is my father's side, of course, and he was Greek, and it was Sotoroporos. Mm. My grandfather changed it to Sparks. So yes, it is partially made up, but not by me.
Yeah, so I feel like there's something similar to RuPaul in that, like with a name like Cater Sparks, there is going to be some sparkle. There's going to be... and you've certainly embodied that and followed a really beautiful, inspiring, and fabulous path. And so I'm curious, I place a lot of value in my time, you know, in the glitterati and in the glamorous New York City nightlife scene and playing in that world. And I am really pleased with how my path has evolved to bring me into this place of service and into the world of personal growth and spirituality. And I'm curious how it was for you. Like what inspired you into making that transition into the stuff that you're doing now?
Yeah, well, I lost my job. I was the editor-in-chief of a website called The Manual. We got bought out and they canned me. And that was super crushing to the ego. I thought it was a job I'd have forever. I founded the website. And then I was in an unhealthy relationship and left that. So no job, no relationship. What's next? And I went to Ananda Ashram in upstate New York and sat with it for a couple of days. And life coaching is what came to me. I've always loved working with people, supporting men. I was in men's fashion and it was kind of, you know, it was very coaching when I worked for the New York Times and I would literally change people's lives if I wrote about them. And I was learning about their process and learning who they are. And I love that. I love supporting people, uplifting people. And so coaching was really something. And I'd had a coach for years in Sedona, Arizona. Mm. So to find that path was really exciting for me. And I didn't look back. You know, I think I found Coactive Training Institute like a couple of weeks after that, signed up and, you know, started in.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. I love that you were able to take that time after this, you know, somewhat traumatic event, this big ego blow, to take that time to go into stillness and be able to find that, you know, it sounds like pretty efficiently, like pretty quickly, and then to follow that path in a good way.
I've always been given the gift of having quick, being very quick on my feet, really knowing. Mm. Knowing what I want. I mean, a place to pick out curtains. And like, I picked out the curtains in literally 5 minutes. And she was like, how did you do that? I'm like, I know what I want, you know? And I've always like, I've always, you know, if this is what I'm going to do, I'm going to do it. And go with both levels.
Yeah. That decisive energy, right? That king energy supported by the warrior. It's like, you see it, you know, you want it and you go for it. I love that.
100%.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I'd say my So, you know, in the archetypes of lover, king, warrior, magician, my strong suit is lover. And so I am more in this space of like, but those curtains are so fabulous and they need this energy and ooh, those curtains. And what about those curtains? So I often am more challenged by that decisiveness that like, no, this is the thing and I'm going to move towards it. So I admire that, that's one of your superpowers. It is definitely a valuable one. And so you went into this stillness piece, and I'm curious for you what it was like making that transition. And specifically, I'm wondering if, you know, I think for many of us who go into the world of personal growth and spirituality and service, we do experience a lot of growth and healing in the transition into that world. And I'm curious if that was true for you as well. And if so, you know, what might you want to share about it?
Yeah, I'd love to hear your side of this too, especially from the New York era, because I love what I do. I love being a coach. I can't wait to just do it more and more and more. And I want to do it till, you know, I'm slipped into the grave. It's such a powerful vehicle to see change and to witness people blossoming and finding this love and connection. And it's also really fun. I had a client last week who said, can we just talk about sex for an hour? I said, yes, we can talk about sex for an hour. So it is, it can be challenging, but also so rewarding. But what I really learned is on so many levels of like, when I went through coach training, I was being coached myself. And that was just, you know, it was, you know, there's a book by Elizabeth Lester called Broken Open. And I was a little broken open for a year and just rewired and like learning about my past. And one thing I learned is that, you know, I came out at 18 and then never worked on that trauma of being bullied and almost suicidal for that long. I just was like, I'm out. It's great. I'm moving on. And then, you know, all the years in New York of looking back and being like, wow, I was not healthy a lot of that time. Glamorous being working for the New York Times, covering Grace Jones at Chaka Khan's parties and spending this time in Art Basel. But there was way too much drinking, any drugs, way too much sex, which sex is fabulous. But when you're at 4 a.m. and you're cross-eyed, you don't know quite who it is. This is not healthy. And I looked back at that with like, I had angels looking over me because I don't know how I'm still alive. I'm not sick. I'm not whatever, you know, because so I put myself in a lot of precarious situations and it was just unhealthy. I remember walking down the street one day in Harlem thinking, I don't remember the last day I was sober. But didn't do anything about it, you know? Because that was our life. I'm sure kids in New York these days are doing the exact same thing. And you know what? If it's your journey, go for it. But what I could have accomplished in New York if I was a little more sober and had a little more self-love was lying out at the gay bars till 5 a.m, you know, looking for love, which as RuPaul taught us, you have to live the life you want to lead. And I wasn't living the life. I wanted to have a partner and have a house in Hudson. And you're not finding that at 5 a.m. on blow at the cock.
Yeah. So I similarly, had moments like that at the cock. And I do look back now at those times. And I also thank my angels. And I'm like, how the hell did I survive all those years playing in that way and at that level? And I feel very grateful to have survived all of it. And yeah, my friend Justin Scott just made me this really beautiful book of our times in New York City, you know, a lot of like drag pictures. And because we were producing parties, we had this little party production and promotions company called Snapdragon. We had this fabulous party in the basement of the Morgan Hotel. And we did a fashion show with the Blondes before they were as big as they are now. And
yeah, I think I was there.
I bet you were. Yeah, that makes sense. I was just looking at these pictures and I'm grateful because what memories and what, you know, fabulous stories, but boy, I'm glad that I survived because it was not healthy. And in many ways, it was dangerous, some of these experiences that I was putting myself in. Similarly, I think I got to a point where I was in New York City and I'd been there for, you know, 15 years or so. And I was starting to flirt with queer spirituality and like learn about these other ways of being gay. And I was connecting with the Radical Fairies. And then I ended up at Easton Mountain, actually. They invited me to serve as a co-producer of a big queer music festival, which I got Justin Vivian Bond to come and MC and brought in a bunch of queer folks. And so it was then that I was like doing my soul searching, like maybe I don't need to be living in New York City anymore. Maybe this, the lifestyle that I have when I'm here is not what I want to do for the rest of my life. And so I also, while I was at Easton, ended up meeting my coach who was just getting started. He's like a super coach now, like killing it. And he was just getting started and coached me, I think for free because he needed the hours. And sure. So I also got this experience of like, oh wow, coaching is so powerful. And then it was then one thing led to another. I ended up, you know, working part-time at Easton, ended up serving as the executive director. And that was my big moment into, okay, now I'm like doing this big boy job and doing it for this in this world of personal growth and spirituality. Like I need to step it up. And so how am I going to do that? And so that was sort of my path into it.
I love that. Yeah, very similar. And I think we all have that moment, which I'm working on with several clients of when is that moment you just say, I'm done with New York, you know? Sometimes we have that moment that we're like, yeah, I mean, I bought a house in Charleston that I could not afford anything in New York City. And, you know, and I have a home here that I bought 11 years ago. And I thought, oh, it'll be a weekend place for a little bit. And then being down here, I was like, oh, no, I'm done with New York. Like, you know, and then I would go back and my whole vibe had just shifted. Like after 3 or 4 days, I'm like, get me out of here, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I still love it. I love, love, love New York. It's a special, special place. And I'm so honored I got to be there for so long. But, you know, my time is here now. And it's equally as, I'm equally as thankful.
I totally love it too. I love visiting it. And I love the people who live there and the lives that they're living. And I know so many people who stay there past the expiration date, who want to get out. And it's a hard city to leave. And, you know, one of my dear friends, Jeffrey Gray, he is now in Palm Springs after decades and decades in New York City. And he is just like a changed person living this really amazing life. So I love that you're able to support people through that process. And I think that really does circle back to this decisiveness, right? It's like so many of us know that we want something else. We know we want a change in our lives. We know we want something different than what we have now. And getting to the place of decision backed by action is the tricky part. Mm-hmm. And we think that we've decided, but we haven't decided if the action isn't there backing it up. We're still on the fence, you know? Right. So I'm sure your superpower comes in and the energy supports that process of decision.
Yeah, thank you. Well, again, that's why coaching is so, I wish I had a coach for so much longer than I, you know, if I had had a coach when I was an editor at the Manual, wow, how it would have been different, like dealing with corporate and the bro culture and like the sexism and like, gosh, it would have been amazing. You know, I would have regulated my body and my mind in such a different way.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I also noticed that you're doing some integration work for folks post psychedelic experiences. I'm curious, were psychedelics any part of your coming to this place of who you are today? Have they supported you on your journey and in what ways?
Yeah. At a previous job, one of my bosses was very into psychedelics and I just still thought of them as drugs. And I was like, I'm done with drugs. I don't do drugs. You know, I did it as a raver. I did the blow. I stopped doing coke. I'm so proud of myself. And he was like, come and do this journey with us. I'm like, no, it's drugs. And so I was like, I was curious and I went and it was mind blowing. Absolutely. You know, being in a cabin upstate with 5-10 other people and just like coming through all our stuff. And, you know, I learned so much about myself at that time. But what was so shocking is we did it and maybe they offered integration. I was so new to it, I don't remember. But I came home to my boyfriend at the time and I just like had this. I was like, wow, I had seizures on the floor and skeletons were coming out of my mouth. And he was like, you want to go get a drink? He had no idea how to understand what I was talking about, and no one did. And friends would kind of make fun of me, and I would start crying. And so I didn't do it again for a long time. And then I did. I slowly got more and more into it. After my divorce, I went to Temple of the Way of Light, did ayahuasca, and I'd already started doing more psychedelics before then. But a lot of mushrooms, which I think are so powerful. Mm-hmm. And so I know that people need that integration. They need, you know, whether they've been to the temple and they need integration, or they did it by themselves, they need some support. I'm here for them, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how that's piqued people's interest when it's on my website that I got trained again. It was, I like to be trained. I like to like have a certificate. That's my, my king power, I guess. I want to be all like, you know, prim and proper about it. So I went to Fluent. Mm-hmm. The psychedelic training course. It was all online. It was a weekend Zoom. It was fascinating. And so, which it's, you know, integration therapy, as you know, is just like coaching, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't have done ketamine to know how to coach someone through, you know, just what was your intention and where are you now, you know? And it's been really beautiful. And I'm just thankful that those, I told my mom when I was like 18 and I was doing ecstasy and acid and peyote and all of it. And she was so worried. And I said, Mom, I promise this is helping me. And I promise you this will be legal one day and be changed. And here we are, you know, our hospital in Charleston, it does it with military veterans to help.
Wow.
PTSD. So we're getting
there. We are getting there. Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful. Wait, a quick side note. What is your astrological sign?
I'm a Taurus.
You're Taurus. Cool. I had a sense that I am a Capricorn, and I also like certifications. I think it's so important, and there's just so many people who are riding this wave of psychedelic tourism, and I think that the integrative opportunities or invitations can really help address that, so that people aren't just going and having a big roller coaster type of experience and then being different for a few days, but then allowing the old patterns to come right back.
Right.
Were the more recent psychedelic experiences, and perhaps particularly the ones in ayahuasca, how did they serve you, if at all, in terms of your spiritual development, your connection to spirit and the spirit realm?
Well, I always, whenever I take mushrooms and now ayahuasca, like I, once it kicks in, I always say to myself, oh, here I am. I'm back. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like, oh, I'm in that place I should be. I talk about holograms. I am in this other universe that like we should all experience. The beauty of that third eye and like seeing the world in such a different, beautiful way, vulnerable, raw way. And so the ayahuasca retreat was really profound for me, because I was supposed to go for my divorce, but then COVID happened. So I went 3 years later, where I already had to process my divorce, met a new partner. But, you know, I had a lot of anger with, you know, the politics in America and stuff. And so I did a lot of inner child healing, which is profound. And, you know, but, you know, when you're in the middle of the jungle and you're doing ayahuasca and you're hearing the Shipibo and you hear the frogs and you see the bats and like moths and the butterflies, you are just so connected, you know. I know we tell our clients to, or I mean, I tell my clients, like, when you're feeling stressed or anxious, like, go outside, touch a tree. And that can feel so healing, but wow, once you've done psychedelics and touched that tree, there's a whole nother level of touching that tree.
Yeah, it's stepping into the hologram and then touching the tree.
And not that you have to be in that hologram every time you touch the tree, but I now know what it feels like to touch that tree and a different state. I'd say altered state. So I can connect to that tree differently, or to nature, ground and sun, everything, you know?
Everything, all aspects of life. I mean, I would say that what we're talking about here, from my perspective, is seeing the world more through a spiritual lens. So it's like, what it makes me think of is, you know, those like kaleidoscopes. It makes me think of like just using a kaleidoscope and looking at different aspects of our lives through the kaleidoscope, through the hologram, and being able to see more aspects of it, more the deeper, richer, more technicolor truth of situations rather than just the human physical story that we place on these things, usually from our egos.
100%.
Cool. So yeah, let's shift over to men's work. I love that that is your main focus in your work, and also in not only in your one-on-one coaching, but also in your facilitation. I know we both have men's retreats coming up. So yeah, let's chat a little bit about what is men's work and why that feels like a particular passion for you to be in service of.
Well, thanks. Yeah. Well, two reasons. One, I was so... three things. One, they said when I started coaching, like, you need an angle. You can't just be life coach, period. Like, life coach for women, for men, for, you know, pregnant women, for alcoholics, or whatever. And I was like, well, life coach for men resonates with me because I was an editor. I was a men's fashion editor. So I've been in, like, the men's world for so long and men's fashion that I thought, well, I enjoy that. I enjoy connecting with men and these different levels. So it makes sense to go that way. But also, a big part of it was a little bit of fear of, like, leaning into, like, working with straight men. Like, they're the ones who bully, you know, for 18 years of my life, still do, some of them. And so to work with them and to be a coach for men, like, that was really leaning into some vulnerability for me. And what's been mind-blowing for me, I'm 47, and, you know, these younger guys, they don't think about, I mean, I don't know, but they never, they, you know, they hire me, they know I'm gay, it says I'm gay on my... And they don't care, you know, and they're as masculine as can be and work on Wall Street and this and that. But they come to me and connect with me, and I'm so honored. But it's also still like, it is that saboteur of me. Like, why is that straight guy interested in working with a gay guy, you know?
And what do you think a queer person or gay guy can bring to that kind of relationship? What do you think is the value of a straight guy working with a gay guy?
Well, I've heard from a lot of other coaches that a lot of straight men go for gay men because it's a less pressure. If you're talking to straight man, bro to bro, maybe a little harder to be vulnerable. And a gay man, you have this little, like, you know, this little in that you're still a man, you still, you know, connect with me in many ways, but there's a vulnerability there, an openness that maybe queer men have that straight men don't. I just, you know, the amount of straight coaches I know who are amazing, I don't necessarily agree with, hey, you know, if that's what, you know, resonates with some guys, awesome. And maybe it's credentials, who knows, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Not to say that we're not meaning to speak in absolutes. There's many straight men and straight coaches and straight healers who are very heart-centered, very vulnerable. But I do think that there is something true in this piece around queer men and gay men being a stand for more heart-centered connection, being a stand for a person in a male form who is able to be with their emotions, who's able to be sensitive. I do think that we, in our tribe, queer men specifically, gay men, I feel like that is part of what our purpose is to embody that and to model that. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not that straight men can't do that and don't do that, but I do think that that is one of the superpowers that is often more likely to be followed through by gay queer men. And that also means that gay queer men need a lot of healing to step into that, to fully step into that.
100%. Yes. And that's, you know, and that's the other part I love is I love working with gay men. You know, I've had female coach, therapists and coaches, you know, for 30 years of my life. And when I first talked to a gay coach, wow, it was just like a wall came down. And just because, like, you know, these women may not understand my addiction or my sex issues or the shame of being bullied, you know, even if they're lesbians, like, there's just a different connection there. And, you know, my clients will come to me and talk about, like, poppers and topping and bottoming and open relationships and stuff that, like, you know, gay men can just connect with on a very deep level and understand the bullying, understand the sex, understand so many finer points that really, it's so beautiful to witness and to be a part of.
Yeah, there's something so valuable about shared experience, right? And to be able to connect so quickly because you have that foundational shared experience. So what about your work with Everyman, is that, in what ways is that different than coaching? And like, can you share a little bit about men's work specifically? And I know Sacred Son, so I've held space for queer men who, or it's really an LGBTQ plus. So we actually attract a lot of allies, a lot of guys who are living straight lives come to our groups as well. But I would hold space for that on a monthly basis with Sacred Sons, which is an amazing organization doing men's work. We're not offering it anymore because it was part of their online offering that they're not doing right now. But so I don't know Everyman as well. And I'm curious what their idea is around men's work. If you could just describe that a little bit.
Yeah, it's really just healing men. You know, they were founded, I think, in 2016 in a cabin in upstate New York. And it was really started out as like a couple of retreats a year and then turned into like four or five or six retreats a year. And then as soon as COVID happened, I don't know how they did this so quickly, but they instantly switched to online platform. And that's where we now do both. We do in retreats and online. And we have training courses, foundations, fundamentals for men to really learn more about themselves. And even if they want to not be a certified coach through us, but learn a lot of our techniques. And it's just wonderful. And the New York Times called us CrossFit for the emotions.
Nice.
Well, I think a lot of the people who are in it just kind of hit, you know, hit it at the right time. And, you know, we've been in GQ and NBC just came to Joshua Tree when we were there last September and filmed us. And that was really, really powerful. That really connected. It really showed what we do. So I love it, again, because I'm with a lot of straight men that's vulnerable for me, but they're amazing men. I've found some great connections in Everyman. I facilitate the GBTQ men's group every week. It's every Wednesday at 2:00. It's open to the public. And I love it because it is a place where gay men can come and drop in and be more spiritual, ask questions, come and process something, you know, you know, their son is treating them poorly, or they're single and lonely, or we can talk about poppers. You know? it's really, and it's a really beautiful space. And I've been running that group now for almost 4 years. And there's a real core group of men that show up every week. And it's fun. It's one of my highlights of my week. I love doing it. And then Mike Sagoon, who is formerly at Everyman, now at a new group called MELD, Men's Emotional Leadership Development. He and I are doing our gay men's retreat at Easton Mountain in May. And we did one last year because we love these bigger retreats that incorporate everybody. But, you know, just like for anything, we love to have something specifically for our community. Mm-hmm. And so we're really excited about this one.
Yeah, again, having that shared experience foundation can be really beautiful. And especially for gay men, I think, to feel safe, right? And certainly, like you said, there's some great medicine in going to a group of men that are straight as well as GBTQ. There's great medicine in that as well. But I think there's something specific that men get to receive when they come to a group that is specifically for GBTQ men. I love to see men in those spaces connect in new ways, right? I feel like so many of the spaces that GBTQ men have access to connect with other men is very sexualized. It's very focused on partying. There aren't a lot of opportunities for gay men to really drop into their hearts together. And that's like one of the most valuable pieces of medicine that I see them experience in these retreats that I also offer.
Yeah, exactly. It is. It's profound to watch them drop in and connect and really focus on things that are specific to our community. And that we can bring up. And sometimes we even say, what do you want to get out of this retreat? What did you come here for? And to hear their reactions, and, you know, we can tweak for that. It's been really beautiful to do that. Sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, the pup's barking a little bit. No, it's totally fine.
Barking. He's ready to go. And and so it's I love doing that, and I love doing it with our community, and just and sharing that space together. And and again, it doesn't have to be crying queers, sad dads. It can be, there's so much celebration there as well. You know, yes, we get to the heavy stuff, we get to the vulnerability, but also we get to the queer joy, and that's equally as therapeutic.
Absolutely. Yeah. Queer joy is definitely something that I am a stand for as well. It's definitely something I incorporate into my work. And the playfulness is, it's so important to weave it in with these things. I, you know, going back to your comment around, you know, we can talk about these deep things, these processing experiences, and we can talk about poppers. I think that is a particular flavor of how queer men often come together, is we are able to both be with those heavy, serious topics and then popcorn in sporadic bursts of queer joy to help mix it up and to sometimes bring some levity to some heavier spaces.
100%.
Cool. Yeah. Anything else you want to share about that particular retreat or men's work in general?
Yeah, well, we're excited about it. It's like I said, Easton Mountain, May 10th to 12th. And yeah, it's one of the biggest retreats we've done for the GBTQ community. So, you know, we still have space available and love some more guys. And we know we hope to do this maybe even twice a year if it resonates, you know, cool. Maybe do East Coast as well. West Coast as well. So yeah, we're really excited to do this. And you know, it's been so incredible just to connect with men through men's work. And, you know, just today I was talking to another coach from Everyman about shame and talking about how straight men deal with process shame and what their shame comes from, what our shame comes from, queer men. And so much of it is so similar, which is so funny, you know. But it was a really beautiful conversation. So I could just do this all the time. I love connection.
Awesome. Yeah. Have I told you, or have you heard of the infamous drag closet at Easton Mountain?
I think you mentioned it. Please tell me more.
Well, not to boast and brag, but it is part of my legacy. It's one of the things I left behind. One of the things I was very much a champion for was, before I served as ED, we had some drag, but it was like on some racks that were kept like way back in this dingy area, and we'd sometimes pull it out. And so we had this space that was unused, and I had us clear it out, and it became the drag closet. And with the help of some generous supporters like Candy Rapper and some other amazing folks, it has transformed into a space where you can go and find a gown in any size, a pair of heels in any size, lots of wigs and hats, and there's more drag that needs to be incorporated that's currently in a storage area. So if you can't find what you want, have them bring you into the storage area.
Amazing.
A little tip. But yeah, it's super fun. And Easton is very much a place where the invitation is always there to find your way into the drag closet after a dip in the hot tub and bring a look to dinner.
Right.
so I encourage you to bring that in. Yeah. And you know, it's funny, like thinking about shame in relationship to that. I feel like all the opportunities for self-expression can sometimes be triggering to those who are still sitting with shame. And so I'm just excited for the men who are going to come join you to be in a safe space where they can both face the challenges, the shame, if that's what's coming up, and also move past it and to go into that space of freedom and self-expression.
Thank you. We are very excited. So we'll keep you posted.
Yes, please do. And yeah, any final thoughts or words you want to share with the listeners before we close up?
I could go on and on, but I'm so thankful for being here. I think it's so important to have these places to be authentic, vulnerable, and learning from each other. You know, I think the beauty of these podcasts are really getting to learn from each other and growing and, you know, just blossoming. So thank you for doing what you do.
Yeah, thank you. It's a total pleasure. And yeah, I can't wait also to see that hologram caftan. The next time we do an interview, I want you to be wearing it.
I will get Anna McCraney on it right now.
All right. So much fun, Cater. Thank you so much. This was a total joy.
Thank you so much for listening, my beloveds. As we both mentioned, we each have retreats coming up. Mine on the West Coast, his on the East Coast. Mine is Awaken Hearts Retreat. That's happening May 2nd through 5th in Marin County, outside of San Francisco. Reach out if you're interested. Cater's is happening at Easton Mountain in upstate New York, and that's happening May 10th through 12th. And the info for both of those events will be in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening. It's always a pleasure. Much love.
Oh my goddess, beloveds. What a joy it was to be with you today. Let's hang out again soon, okay? And if you can think of a friend who would benefit from hearing this, please share it with them. Sending so much love and light to you today and every day. Until next time, peace.